Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have back here on the program Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And monthly on a Tuesday, she's here. We talk about things that grow in the home landscape. If you have a problem, maybe you still have some sort of a problem from this season as things are now kind of winding down, but maybe you're still thinking about a problem. Maybe if, and I'm sure people who are serious, dedicated gardeners are already thinking about next year. So maybe you're thinking about next year. There's something new you want to plant. You need to get some advice. You're doing some last minute here cleanup, maintenance. It is the time where you might, certain kinds of things you might want to be digging up and moving things around, planting new stuff. Yeah, I guess that's still possible as warm as it's been. And in all of that, plus we can also do houseplant kind of stuff. All you got to do is pick up the telephone and give us a call. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Thank you very much for being
good
here.
Good morning.
So it's been very strange.
You know,
it's been very strange because all summer long we've been down on our moisture, so mm-hmm. it's been dry. Mm-hmm. And now here recently we've had unseasonably warm temperatures. So here we haven't got the moisture that we would have expected. Mm-hmm. And also it's been hot. And it's really, you can see it's been hard on things.
And it really is a kind of double whammy. The fact that it's hot and the fact that it's dry ends up being really tough for plants. And especially as we're starting to go into winter, believe it or not, it will get cool eventually. But as we're going into winter, that is not the time we'd like to see plants stressed. Mm-hmm. So it really is a time to be thinking about all those plants you have out there, especially things like evergreens, things that, you know, hang on to their leaves or needles throughout this season. That's really, it's really tough on them, especially because they continue to lose moisture even though the soil temperatures are cold. So really start thinking about watering your, even ones that have been in there for a number of years.
So that's if you have not been doing that up to now, yeah. Is it still, is it too late to try and get some?
I'd absolutely still go ahead and water things unless you know that they're plain old dead. Even if the leaves don't look all that great, because a lot of times, through drought stress or whatever, they'll brown up or their edges will brown up and they don't look all that great. But continue to water them. As long as there's still, green something within the stems, I'd still water them, because then at least maybe they'll be hydrated enough so that they can make it through the winter and then put on a new set of leaves. So even if the leaves don't look all that great right now, I'd absolutely go ahead and water them.
Do you know offhand what is now the average date for the first frost? Are we anywhere close to that?
The 15th is normally.
The 15th, so that's really not that far away.
Yeah, it isn't that far away. And I was looking at, I was looking up a few things on when was the first frost, when was the latest frost we've ever had. And I think the first one was like September 21st or something like that. We're actually frosted that early. Mm-hmm. And then the latest one was like in November, believe it or not. So actually there was a year where we went clear through into November. I don't remember that one. But so it's certainly possible, but October 15th would certainly be the date where we'd start thinking about that. So what does that mean? Well, it looks like, it may stay warm and then drop like a rock, which is not what we like to see either.
Well, is it really too late if someone wanted to plant a perennial, as long as they knew that it was something that really was definitely winter hardy for our zone? Would that be taking too much a chance to say, okay, let's go ahead and do it?
Yeah, I think because of the concern, usually we say September is a good time to be moving perennials and some of those. Yeah. Once we get into October, we get into that risk of sure, you may be able to get, if it was something that maybe, is pretty tough, like daylilies or sedum or something like that, is a pretty tough plant, can take a lot of abuse. I probably wouldn't worry about it too much. But, even though, if we knew it was going to stay warm through the month of October, we'd be fine on that, just to give it some time, because we like to get them somewhat established. Even though we've moved them in late season. So I'd be a little bit concerned. I'd still probably think about, if you had trees or shrubs, I'd still be thinking about planting those, because we certainly planted those in October and November. So maybe some of those kind of things. Certainly bulbs, we have spring blooming bulbs and those kind of things I wouldn't worry about too much. I'd go ahead and plant those. So there are some things, but a little more finicky things, I'd probably wait till spring.
All right. We have some callers. We'll get right to it. Starting first with someone in Mattoon. This is Line 1. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Mm-hmm. We're putting in a new yard, and I had two questions. One is, the books we read say we should plant trees in the spring. All the newspaper-type articles we read says we should plant the trees here in the fall. And second question is, I've looked at trees, and I was at a local nursery in Champaign yesterday, and they essentially did not have any trees left to be purchased. Mm-hmm. Are they still available in this area?
Yeah, you actually bring up a couple of good questions in the sense that you certainly can plant them. You know, most of the things can be planted in the fall and they'll do just fine. And I've certainly done that myself. But you're absolutely right in the sense that the selection is much slimmer in the fall because most folks have not gotten in a new shipment or whatever, probably wouldn't, unless you go with somebody that can actually dig it for you. So I would certainly still check around with the local garden centers, but you may have to check with some of them that actually have the their own nursery where they can dig them up. And that would be, you know, there's certainly a number of them around here that have their own nurseries. So I'd look for those, maybe some bigger operations that might be able to do that for you, if you have particular ones. Otherwise, you may have to wait till April. But you can do it, you know, generally either way. So that's why you're probably hearing a couple of different things in the sense that for most plants, they do, for most trees and shrubs, we can do it fall or spring.
Okay, thank you very kindly.
Yeah. The other thing, I should have asked. Maybe
he's already gone. Is Paul still there?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to ask. Now, you say you're putting in a new, are you putting in a new lawn as well?
Yes. In fact, we're hoping to lay sod this Saturday.
Okay. My thought, the reason I bring that up is my thought is you might be better off to go ahead and do your sod if you're planning on doing that now. I'd do your sod now and wait till spring to do your trees. Because the thing we've found out more and more is that because you have to put so much water on the sod to keep it wet, that it often is actually overwatering the trees, the new trees.
Oh, okay.
There's some concern with that. And so if you can do that, you might be better off just to go ahead and wait till spring for your trees.
Okay, we were planning to wait till the spring at least on all of the shrubs and everything like that,
right.
But you also recommend the waiting on the tree too.
Yeah, so. It's just because the amount of water, you really have to dump on a lot of water. I don't know if you realize that already with the sod.
We do.
Unfortunately, some of the trees just really don't like that particularly.
Okay. So. Well, thank you very kindly.
Good luck.
All right, thank you. Let's go to someone here on a cell phone, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I have, my front yard has really taken a beating this summer, and so I was digging in there trying to get up some of the thatch that's really seems to be really thick, and underneath that I found a lot of, like, white, like, moldy stuff, and I wondered what that was and how can I treat that. I also, in September, put on a fertilizer with a weed control, mm-hmm. And can I put some more on there, or what shall I do?
Well, I think you have to decide what the biggest problem is here. Do you have just really large areas where there's no good grass left?
Well,
does everything kind of died out?
It's coming back a little bit because I've been watering a lot more, but there was this one area that I dug a lot of things up, and then I had some sod that I was digging up in the back in my garden area, and I put it on top of that, but it was all that white, moldy kind of stuff underneath it.
So is it kind of where the thatch kind of would be meeting the soil, kind of in that area?
Like what? I'm sorry?
Where the thatch or that spongy layer or whatever, the kind of dead grass or whatever, where that kind of meets the soil, is that where you're seeing I really wouldn't worry about that because a lot of times, especially when you get any kind of decaying stuff, no matter what it is, you get a certain amount of fungal growth and you're probably just seeing part of a fungal growth there.
Okay.
So I'm not sure I'd worry about it all that much. Unless you knew, you know, the spots were absolutely dying out for a particular reason. There's certainly some funguses that we can get on grasses, but I don't imagine with as dry as it's been that that's been quite the issue.
No, I think it's more dry.
Yeah, so I'm not sure.
Mow my grass this summer, and they mowed it real short, and then all the weeds just
not good.
Yeah,
not good. Well, as far as your any kind of weed control, I think you need to decide, I guess, you know, where you are in this. We're getting kind of late to do any grass seeding, but the soil temperatures are still high enough; it'd be kind of risky. But I guess what my point is that if you don't have much good grass out there, you're always going to be fighting weeds, which you probably know that already.
Right.
So if you anything you can do to help encourage the grass is a good thing. Getting a little late to do.
Excuse me. If I put another layer of the fertilizer with the weed control, do I need to wait until I put more grass seed down for? till spring? Or
yeah, you'd really be too late in the season. Actually, September is usually as late as we get. So you certainly can go ahead and do that if you want to go ahead and do a weed and feed. And actually, for a lot of the perennial weeds, this is a good time to do it. We often think, you know, with spring for dandelions and stuff, but actually in the October is a good time to do that. Now, you are, unless we get into some rain here, you're going to need to be watering it, because the fertilizer as well as the herbicide is not going to work very well if it's real dry.
Okay. And how do you get rid of Creeping Charlie and the vine, whatever it is, the viney stuff?
Oh, bindweed?
It's viney. Yeah, it's vine.
Creeping Charlie.
Creeping Charlie, and there's, what is it, deer, some other kind of.
Might be bindweed or something you're thinking of.
Does it have a kind of a heart-shaped leaf?
Yeah, a little
flowers on it. That's Creeping Charlie.
Yeah. How do you get rid of that?
And these are in your lawn or in your garden or?
Both.
That was a silly question on my part, wasn't it? Of course it's in both. Of course it's in both. Well. In the lawn kind of areas, I think the biggest thing with Creeping Charlie is, and it's also listed as ground ivy. So if you're reading an herbicide label and it doesn't say Creeping Charlie, it's also listed as ground ivy.
Ground ivy, okay.
Yeah, so look for that as well. So read the labels. Generally, on Creeping Charlie, I think the biggest thing is that if you do use an herbicide application, is whenever it tells you to do another application, then do that other application. Usually it's like 6 to 8 weeks to do another application. So I think the big thing with Creeping Charlie is one application is not going to do it. You need to do a second one. Now, we're getting a little late here, so I'd probably go ahead and do one, you know, this October, but then really think about it again, obviously, in the spring. And then, again, you know, think about, you know, actually doing that other application next year. If that makes sense, rather than wait. Because I think the problem with Creeping Charlie is the first application kind of beats it down, and then it just makes it mad, and then it pops back up again, and then you got to beat it down really quick before it pops back up again. This is war, I tell you. This is war.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I would think about that. In a garden situation, it's a little bit different. You can, actually smother it out pretty good if you want to use, like, black plastic. Actually, I've used thick layers of newspaper, then with mulch on top of that. So sometimes just smothering it out helps a lot in garden situations.
Okay.
Yeah, good luck.
All right.
Thank you. And we'll continue. And let's see. Next person is someone in Urbana, line number 3. Hello.
Yes, I planted some chrysanthemums the other day, which I suspect is a little late. And I'm wondering what I can do to improve their chances of surviving the winter.
Yeah. You know, mums are really hard these days, because I will tell you, part of it is not your fault. It's not your fault if they don't make it through the winter. I think through a lot of the breeding, trying to get new colors, new shapes, and all that kind of stuff, I think that we've lost some of the hardiness on some of those. So I will tell you that sometimes it's just really not going to work well here. But what can you do to help it? I think probably the big thing is that they hate to be too wet, which I don't think is going to be a problem this year, but they hate to be too wet. So wherever you planted it, hopefully they're well drained. You can actually put like shredded leaves or something over the top of it. You know, once the temperatures actually drop, then I would go ahead and put shredded leaves and try to protect it more that way, and then hope for the best.
Well, I was wondering about mulching, so shredded leaves would be fine.
Right. You want something that's not going to mat down too much, because they really do hate to be too wet over the wintertime.
So whole leaves wouldn't be nearly so good as shredded ones.
Well, unless it's like oak or something that actually tends to kind of fluff itself up. Maple leaves tend to flatten out, and they actually get too wet. So if it's maple leaves, I definitely shred them. If it's oak, you could probably get away with not shredding them.
I have some hardy begonias, grandees. And I've covered those up with leaves the last few years, and they don't seem to settle too badly, so maybe the leaves are okay.
Okay. Well, then if that works for you, then I would just go ahead and do that and then hope for the best. It really is tough to get mums through the winter these days.
Leave the tops on?
There's a lot of debate on that. I kind of like leaving the tops on. If they're not too tall, I kind of leave them on there, because it helps to hold the mulch in there. I usually leave them if they're really tall. If they do live and they're really tall, then I generally cut them down. But if they're only like 10 inches or so tall, I wouldn't cut them down.
The lady before, I wonder if she's referring to viney milkweed.
Oh, there's a lot.
Which is a vile thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of you know, those viney kind of things that are really tough to control. Either they produce lots and lots of seeds or they're perennial. But yeah, viney milkweed would be another one. But that's going to be coming up from seed, which is a little bit different. But, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Oh, thank you.
We'll have to do name that weed.
Yeah, I was thinking like you. I was kind of thinking bindweed, because that also is really, man, talk about tenacious. Mm-hmm. And it seems like it'll grow up virtually overnight.
It does.
And tight, really, really tightly wrap around things. And one minute, you know, if you look away, then suddenly it can be just covering other plants.
And the trouble is, it's a perennial, so it comes back every year, and then plus it produces flowers, so it all also have seeds. But the problem is, when you try to dig it out, I don't know if you've ever tried to dig it out, the roots tend to just pop, and so you don't get the whole root. And so if you don't get the whole root, then it just pops right back up again.
Yeah, I guess
so
mostly what I'm just trying
a
to
lot
do
like
is just
dandelions.
Pull, when I see it, it's just try to pull it.
Yeah,
up.
And unfortunately, I've actually tried to work it, you know, actually with a trowel or something, try to work it to try to get as much root up as you possibly can, and that does help. But yeah, it's tough. When any little root that gets left, it just pops right back up again.
Our guest here, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month, she's on the program. On Tuesday, we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. If you have questions, call us 333-9455. That's for Champaign Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And we have someone to talk with in Chicago, line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Here I go again. I bought a rubber plant from the supermarket and did real well for about 3 months, but now the leaves are drooping and they're folding together. Is that the breed or is it me?
So, and you know that you're watering them... All right, they're not too wet or too dry?
Well, I thought it was too dry.
Okay. Hey, did you repot it at all once you brought it back from the grocery store?
Some kind of a soilless mix, I guess.
And you repotted it?
I could, yes.
Okay. That's probably what it is, because a lot of times, you know, when we bring them home from the grocery store or whatever, is that generally they're in a fairly small pot, and so often they need to be repotted. Because then if you leave them in those small pots, what happens is it's really hard to keep them watered. You know, you water and water, but there's just not enough soil mass in there. So I suggest to go ahead and repot it, and then you may find it'll do much better for you.
What is the quality of that stuff in the supermarket?
What's the quality?
Pardon?
What's the quality? Well, is that your question?
Good quality plants, or are they sort of made to sell?
Well, I think you can get quality plants a lot of different places, but you really it's one of those things you kind of have to train your eye a little bit to really look for things, make sure it doesn't have a lot of yellow leaves. I always look for insect issues, if there's, you know, looking at the leaves closely, those kind of things. But you can certainly get quality plants a lot of different places. A lot of it depends on aftercare, too. Once the plants actually get to that place, then how are they cared for? So.
Oh, I see. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. I got a question here that actually came in over our website. I want to make sure that I get in. We have someone here who has a lavender plant that's in the ground, and they say that it's planted near their patio, and so they want to know what can they do, should they do, to try to get it through the winter?
Yeah, lavenders are another one. Those are really tough. But the biggest thing with lavender is actually where you plant it and the soil that it's in. They need really well-drained soil. They're native to Mediterranean rocky areas, so they're used to this well-drained soil as opposed to this really, you know, high organic matter type of soil that we have. So I will tell you, obviously this is kind of after the fact, but it's better if you can plant them in lots and lots and lots of sand, almost more sand than soil. And if you can have those kind of areas, they're going to survive the winter much better. So I will tell you that's probably be the best thing. But barring that and trying to getting it through the winter now, I wouldn't cut it back. We generally cut it back in the spring once it starts to actually leaf out a little bit, then you can cut it back. But generally with those, you really don't want a lot of wetness around them. They want to be dry. And I actually mulch mine with sand as opposed to anything along the way of wood chip mulch or any of that stuff. So it's definitely a plant I would not mulch that way. But I wouldn't top dress it with sand if they haven't already done that.
Okay. So we have some growing in our front yard that is right beside a walkway. And I think that somehow, maybe just by accident, we picked the right spot. Because
it could very well be.
It, in fact, when they laid, it's like stone pavers, or, you know, so they laid it, they put sand down, and it extends past where the walk is a little bit. And I also think that somehow that the being right by the walk kind of acts like a heat sink, and that spot might be just marginally warmer. So we've had some lavender there, and it's been there for several years, and it seemed to be really happy. So maybe we just
That's serendipitous.
I didn't know that when I put it in. I just thought, well, here's a good spot. Let's put it
right
there.
Here's an open spot. That's usually my
and
technique.
It's really done really well.
But I think you're absolutely right. I think all those things, so getting it in the right spot with the right soil, very well drained, all that kind of stuff, that's how they're going to make it through the winter. Unfortunately, a lot of the other things, trying to cover it up or whatever, isn't going to help you if the roots themselves are too wet.
So and I'm sure that it applies to a lot of plants that there are, you know, some people say, well, I tried something and I didn't have good luck with it. You know, you think, well, some things do well and some things don't. But it could indeed be that you picked the wrong spot for that plant to put in. Yeah, and if you had put it someplace else, maybe it would have been perfectly happy and would have done fine.
Right, so. Right. You have to kill a plant at least 3 times before you really understand it.
Oh, well, I'm doing pretty well. Pretty soon I'm going to be understanding my plant so well, and we'll be having conversations. Several callers here, ready to go. Terre Haute next, line one. Hello.
Hi, you kind of scared me that you talk to plants. Do they talk back to you?
Not yet.
Don't go there, David.
Not yet, but any day now. Any day now, I'm sure. I tell them how pretty they are and how wonderful they're doing. And, they haven't spoken back.
Yeah.
Well, maybe you should have your medication checked.
Anyway, the neighbors are still wondering about it, too.
Exactly.
I have a tropical hibiscus, like tree, I guess, almost. How do I take care of that during the winter?
Yeah.
Never had one before.
Yeah, actually, they're really pretty tough to bring them inside and grow them like a houseplant if you got space for them. That's always the big thing. But I actually, over the last year or so, I actually have dug mine up and just put them in the basement with fluorescent lights. And they really have done amazingly well. And they actually kind of bloom even a little bit. But they actually will do very nicely over the wintertime as a as a houseplant. So they don't like to get cold. Don't let them go through frost. I'd be digging them up probably now, to be honest with you. And you can certainly still leave it outside in the pot, but then it's ready, you know, that minute it starts to get too cold to bring it back in, because they really don't like temperatures much below 60 and actually will quit flowering if the temperatures are much below 60. So that's a big thing. But the big thing on those tropicals is also just insects are going to be an issue for you. Spider mites really like hibiscus. Mealybug really likes hibiscus scale. So just really watching them. You might even go ahead and use some insecticidal soap on them now. So if their case there is happens to be something on there, but I really watch them. Like in December and January, I'd really be looking at them close and see if they don't have insect issues.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, good luck.
All right,
David.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
David, I talked to my plants too.
I'm comforted. I'm comforted to hear that. Do your plants talk back to you?
Unfortunately, sometimes. Yes.
Sometimes. Okay.
Something for you to look forward to.
Oh, great. Thank you very much.
I'll join them in the group home.
Now you tell me you've never talked to your plants.
I have talked to them, actually, sometimes. I've actually threatened them sometimes,
Ooh, now that's... I've never done that.
I have threatened them sometimes, like with my...
Does it help?
No, it actually didn't help at all.
See?
I had a wisteria that wasn't blooming. Mm-hmm. And I'd had it for like 7-8 years. I had this thing. It never bloomed. I did everything to it, and I finally just threatened it. Still didn't bloom. So, you know where it is now?
I'm afraid
it's no longer with us.
Oh, it's gone to the great...
Hey.
Plants.
That's right.
Place in the sky. Where? What are we doing here? I have no idea.
I don't know.
Let's see. Oh, Urbana, line number 2. There next. Hello.
Yes, my conversations are mostly threats as well.
See.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
Yes.
Whatever works.
I have been helping my kids in new houses, new gardens, and we are fighting a plain, what looks to me like plain green bishop weed.
Oh, sure.
Oh, it's hideous stuff. Are we going to be able to deal with that with Roundup, or does it take, atom bombs?
Yeah. So it's just in one area that you're really trying to get rid of it, that you want to plant something else? Is that
the one? I mean, in one of these gardens, it's everywhere.
It's coming up among other things
Oh, yeah.
That you want to keep?
Oh, grass, wow. It's just... Yeah.
It is one of those things that you could use, you know, obviously in certain areas you could actually use Roundup, one of the non-selective herbicides. Obviously, you have to, you know, be very careful with it and make sure it doesn't contact anything you want to keep.
Right.
Or you can try digging it up as much as you can. But actually, sometimes what I've done in garden situations where it just seems like there's a weed that's just in among everything, I've actually dug up the plants I want to keep.
Yes.
And then gotten the roots away from them, the bad roots away, the roots of the weeds away from them. And then worked on the bed, got it cleaned up, and then replanted. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it does take that kind of thing because they always get intermingled with whatever other plant they have. And so it's really hard to deal with.
It is.
Yeah, you can also try, you know, trying to, and you could even do that now if you wanted to do something like the heavy layers of newspaper and mulch. And I've had fairly good luck with that. You just wet the newspaper and put it over and then put mulch. And that does a pretty good job, but then it'll still pop up right around your good plants.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But at least it, you know, minimizes the amount of plants that are out there. But it's a tough one. It really is.
Do you feel the roots are as tenacious as bindweed? Are we in that same level of difficulty?
I think the problem with this one is also because as you dig it up, the roots just tend to pop.
Yeah.
And then of course, then they just come up again. So it almost requires actually digging the whole patch up and then sort of sifting through and getting the roots out there. But it's probably going to be a matter of both. And I think that's what I might do is go ahead and try to either smother it out, dig it up as much as you can, and then those little sprouts that pop up, either try and dig them out again or use just a little bit of, you know, like on a paintbrush or something, you can go ahead and use one of the non-selective herbicides like Roundup on those.
Okay.
It's tough.
Three-pronged.
And you're a good mother doing that for them.
I hope they realize that. I've got my own garden. I don't need to be adding more acres here.
I know. Well, good luck.
All right. To my shovel. Thanks, Sam.
All right, thank you. Bye. Another caller here, Urbana. This is line 3. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have, for the first time, I'm growing a gorgeous couple of dragon wing begonias.
Oh, great plant, aren't they?
Yeah, and they've been very happy. One of my secrets, which I finally learned, not being a religious waterer of potted plants, is I got myself an automatic water timer.
Oh.
With a battery-operated thing, stuck it on a joint in my, you know, I put a diverter on my outside faucet, added that, and then you can buy little tubing that for watering systems. You find it took me a while to figure out where it is. It's not in the gardening stuff. It's in the plumbing section.
Yeah.
The stores.
Yeah.
And so I have it programmed to water it every other day for about 7 minutes. So it waters that and it waters the balcony plants. And it's been the solution to traveling. But my question is, the solution also to my lack of...
it's tough.
Yeah, I'm just not a compulsive waterer. I'm wondering whether it would be worth bringing this angel wing in. The three plants I put in this one pot, with the pot, come up to my waist. And I have a nice big sunny window. At least it gets southern sun in the wintertime. I'm wondering whether this plant will look decent enough if I bring it inside or whether I should just get new ones next year and not worry about, not try to have some over the winter to enjoy their flowers.
Right. Personally, begonias generally do very well indoors. They really do a nice job because they really don't need the high light maybe that some of the other plants. And if you have a sunny window, I'd say go for it. And we probably wouldn't normally go ahead and do a lot of pruning on them. I realize it's fairly large. But if you have a sunny window and you feel like you could still go ahead and water it, and you could do some pruning on it, it should pop right out of that. But those dragonwing begonias are just super. I've been so impressed with them. For shady spots, they just have really, really outdone themselves, I think, over the last couple of years. So people, that'd be a good plant for people to check into. And I'm glad you mentioned the battery operated timers, because now that those are more available, before you always had to have electricity and it was always kind of a pain. So those battery operated timers for watering are really a great solution for, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah. With the creeping Charlie, every once in a while when it needs to be taught manners, I get out a very stiff garden rake, not a leaf rake,
mm-hmm.
you know, the hard metal garden rake. And this is when I also want exercise. And the ground has to be wet. It can't be dry.
Mm-hmm.
Or it has to be at least damp. So you rake a patch of grass in multiple directions, and with the rake at a steep angle so that you catch the stems of the
oh, sure.
creeping Charlie. And you have to do it, you know, at right angles and then at another angle until you seem like you've gotten most of it up. And that tends to teach it some manners for a while until it comes back again.
Well, that's a good idea. Yeah.
And I'm positive that the vining weed, that's the vining milkweed, I'm convinced there's only one plant, not champagne or banana, and that the roots are all interconnected. And the reason that I'm being a little bit over the top here, but not that much. For years, I have been trying to smother this stuff. It keeps coming up mm-hmm. in the same places in my flower and vegetable garden. And what I do is I chop it back till it's about an inch or two tall, and I stick a coffee can on top of it.
Mm.
And that kills it for a while. But next year, it comes up in the exact same place. So it's not only those milkweed-type seeds that go floating around, but I'm convinced they're all interconnected. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to come back in the same place.
Yeah, it is really hard. Actually, a master gardener told me one time that she's convinced that underneath the Earth's crust is actually a very thick layer of bindweed. And it just, whenever there's a chance, it pops up.
Yeah. I feel that way about Virginia creeper myself.
Everybody has there.
Okay, thanks.
Right. Okay, thanks.
We're a bit past the midpoint here. We certainly have time for other calls. Sandy Mason is with us. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Each month on Tuesday, in the first hour she's here, we talk about lawn and garden care and things that grow in the home landscape. Houseplants, too. That's perfectly fine. Questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Did you have an event that you'd wanted to mention?
Well, actually, the U of I Extension offices, and actually people can check throughout the state for one of our Telenet series, and actually it's on growing grapes in the home yard, and we're getting more and more interest. People are interested in that either for making wine or just fresh eating or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's actually going to be, it's actually on October 16th at 1 o'clock, and then it's aired again on October 18th at 7 o'clock. So you have two chances. And so just check with your local Extension office to see if they're actually going to go ahead and have that program as well. So they're really good programs. It's over the distance learning process where there's actually a person, but they're in another city and mm-hmm. doing the whole program. So you still get to interact with folks. So it's a great opportunity.
So you then go to your local Extension
right.
place, and then it's actually a live two-way
yep.
video conference
yep.
deal, so you can actually ask questions of that person and
sure.
there can be some back and forth.
Sure.
Okay.
So it really works out very well, and so you get an opportunity to talk to the expert, but you don't have to drive as far, so that's the good news.
Good deal. Okay. Well, again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and we do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. You have questions for Sandy. We'll continue here. We have someone on line number one. Hello.
Hi there.
Yes.
I just wanted to mention something. I was having a hard time killing a mulberry tree once. At the same time, I was trying to get rid of a trumpet vine that had been alive longer than I had at that point. And it just was everywhere under the ground. And I can't remember who told me, or I'd love to give them credit. They said copper nails. Cut it down, get the green that you can see, and pound copper nails in around the bottom. And I have found absolutely nothing, including some trees that grow in Florida that I thought the copper might not work. There's copper in the soil where the trees came from. It kills them immediately. And you make sure you get your copper nails back because you don't want to leave copper in the ground.
Right.
Not good for any of the plants. But that trumpet vine, all I had to do was knock the green down with the lawnmower so it couldn't do its processing thing for one season, and it never came back.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. I've never heard of that before, for actually using it for... I've never heard that before as a weed killer kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
It's truly amazing. I was one of the people, the gardeners at Meadowbrook Park in Urbana, that told me that, but I don't have a clue who it was. No. Anyway, I thought I'd share that. If you've got trees of heaven it works on and any of those berry trees that come back,
It works. Well,
okay.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I guess it's something people could try.
I don't know. Is it difficult to find copper nails?
Well, I was just wondering about that, too. I don't know.
Hardware and buy copper nails?
Generally, you need to go to... No, let's put it this way. They'll be around for a long time because of the copper valleys that go in nice homes, really expensive homes. And you can't nail that with any other type of nail.
Oh, okay.
So wherever there's copper installed, there will be copper
nails.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Well,
thanks for sharing. Company, and maybe the actual older lumber yards where you can buy a few instead of having to buy a box full.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thanks for
Thanks for sharing.
People can try it.
Yeah, I never heard.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's go on here. Go to line number 4. This is the toll-free line. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hi. I have a question about a Norway spruce. I just recently moved, and there's a Norway spruce in my yard, and I had it cut up to about 6 or 8 feet off the ground, so there's all this nice space now. And I have a few hostas close around the trunk, but I'm wondering if I should leave it be until the springtime, or if I could plant grass under it. Or what I should plant under it, because I know it's probably very acidic soil. So I will hang up and listen.
Mm-hmm. Well, are you sure that Sandy might want to ask you? You want to ask a question, or you say?
I think we're fine with this.
Right.
You might be surprised that it's probably not as acidic as you might think. I know we hear that quite a bit, but actually it's probably not as acidic. But it's not so much the acid, it's the dryness. They're very dry underneath spruce trees, and actually spruce and pine both, they have really extensive root systems. And if you've ever dug around them, you know that they have a lot of fibrous roots. They're very close to the surface, and so they really compete with the plants for water. So it's a very dry kind of shade, and that's probably the big issue. I think you might have a tough time trying to grow grass under them. And it probably wouldn't be anything I'd probably recommend anyway. I think you'd be better off doing something that's a little bit different in the sense of maybe some of the ground covers that are out there, whether it's, it might be a vinca, a periwinkle, but any of those, you're going to have to water them till they get established because it's so dry under there. As I said, it's going to be tough even for drought-resistant plants to survive until they get established. So I think if you want to do more hostas, I think that's fine. But again, making sure that you water them, and that's probably the big thing. But you certainly can grow plants underneath them. I've seen even things like rhododendrons and some of those certainly will grow fine underneath those if they're watered. So those are few thoughts.
All right. Hope that helps. Let's go to line number 2. This is the next caller here. Hello.
Yes. I've got a mature Korean lilac. It's about 8 foot in diameter and maybe 8 foot tall. It's a beautiful tree. It's about 10 years old. But about 3 weeks ago, 10-15% of it just turned brown and died.
So it had looked fine up until then.
Yeah, it had where you have a branch and it will come out in three. One of the three died. The rest of the tree looks beautiful. It's not one side or one. It's all around, and on the just like every third or fourth branch has turned brown and died.
Yeah, I think a couple things I would look for. They do get some diseases, some canker type diseases that can cause branches to die back. So there's a few things along that line that could very well be, and it would just be a matter of cutting those out and then try to invigorate the plant as much as you can. You know, water it. I'd even still water it now. I probably wouldn't fertilize until next spring and just try to invigorate it. It's about the best we can do if it was a canker disease. But the other thing that I've noticed over the last few weeks is, I'm not sure if you're familiar with what scale looks like, the insect scale. And it was one of those things, and I must admit, it was even in my own yard. I'm going to admit this. It was actually in my own yard, and I had some lilacs kind of off in the distance kind of thing. I hadn't really been looking at them too much and noticed that one of the branches was dying, and sure enough, it's got scale all over it. And because scale, the insect, and scale looks like little, they almost look like little helmets. They don't look like insects. You can't see a head or tail or legs or anything, so they're easy to miss, but they will cover the stem and will actually kill branches and actually would kill the whole plant. And so I will tell you, just from my experience, I'd be looking for scale. And for scale, it's a matter of actually we can spray it during the dormant season, but then also again next season. And it's a matter of you would have to do some spraying. Usually some horticultural oil works out just fine for those. So that would be the other thing I would check. And so check the stems. You'll see all these little things that'll just pop off with your thumbnail if you mess with the stem a little bit. It'll pop off. So that would be my other thought. So those would be the two things I'd be looking for.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, right, good luck.
Did you feel that as it was a kind of a personal failure for you, the
yes,
finding scale?
I really was. Interesting. You know, I'm out in the land of corn and soybeans, so there's a whole, there's not a whole lot of things around me. So, the first thing you think is, okay, where did this come from? But things just show up.
Yeah.
And so I was really surprised that it had, and then how quickly I felt like, because I'd looked at it before and hadn't noticed any, mm-hmm. So it really felt like how quickly. So scale maybe did quite well this year. And then the plants are under a lot of stress. So it's easy for them to sort of die back from these kind of things. But yeah, I did see that. But the other thing I found was bagworms. And here, again, I'm out in the land of corn and soybeans, not a whole lot of other trees around me. Sure enough, here's bagworms on my tree. But I did get those early enough. I just had to pop a few bags off, and then it was fine. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting how those things will come in. They, maybe coming in on birds or something, but they're certainly blowing in, whatever. But they certainly can make it even if you feel like you're on an island.
Yeah, I suppose with scale, too, if you could bring it, if it was on a plant,
sure.
That you bought and then introduced into your
sure.
your yard. I mean, it's possible for one to bring it in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And for a lot of those scale, unfortunately, a lot of them will go to a number of different plants. They don't necessarily just hang out on lilacs or whatever. Mm. So that's the other problem, is that they'll certainly transfer to other plants. So that would certainly be another thing that I'd be looking for on lilacs.
All right. Let's talk with line number one. Hello.
Is that me?
Yes.
Hi. I had an aster at one house, and when I moved it just about a mile to another house, it was purple at the first place, and the flowers turned white with yellow centers at the second place. So do you know what would have caused that, what the soil conditions would be?
Well,
acidic or not?
Yeah, actually, that's... plants really don't do that. So I imagine you had another plant within that group when you dug it up. Because there's certainly lots of, like, daisy fleabane, and there's a lot of white with yellow center flowers that are out there.
It wasn't fleabane. It was aster, but it was...
Well, more than likely there was another plant in there, because I will tell you, they just don't necessarily do that. Sometimes you'll get some shade changes. They'll go from purple to lighter purple or some of that kind of thing, but to have them just mutate is just really rare. They do reseed themselves, and certainly if you get seedlings in there, the seedlings will often be different colors, and you can almost assure they're going to be different colors. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if maybe there was even a seedling within that would have... then come up. Plants just don't do, unless you're near a power plant or something, you're just not going to see those kind of weird kind of mutations normally.
Well, what kind of soil do asters like? Do like acidic or not?
Anything. Oh. Asters are really pretty tough plants, to be honest with you. And any kind of, they'll have to even take a little bit of moisture in the soil. So pretty much anything. I would just water them when you first get them established. But after that, they're really pretty tough plants and will take a lot. They like sun, and they'll do much better in the sun.
Okay. And then I have a question about blueberries versus service berries. Now, mm-hmm. No, blueberries like acidic soil,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about service berries?
Not nearly as finicky, and you can do though. They probably like it slightly acidic, like 6.5 somewhere along on there. But they actually do quite well on our soils around here. So generally, the acidity of the soil really isn't an issue for service berries.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
All right, thanks. I can certainly think of one thing, but only one thing that I know of that the soil chemistry affects the color of the flower, and that's hydrangea.
Are there
in fact others where, depending on the soil,
right.
the
right.
flowers will actually be a different color?
Yeah, you get, but it's usually a very subtle kind of a change. Hydrangeas are probably the exception to that rule. Sometimes you'll see some changes where it used to be clear white and now it's got little pink tones to it. Mm. Or it's usually that kind of thing. Or if it's in a really sunny spot, like you get this with irises, where if it's in a really, really sunny spot, and sometimes the color will actually fade out. And so that's usually what you see. it's kind of these shade changes, but not this huge, you know, really dramatic change that.
So you wouldn't have a something that's, that was a blue flower and then suddenly it was a.
There's something else going on there. It's either there's a seedling there, there was a piece of a root, there's something else going on there. More than likely, that's much more likely than to have it just mutate into a different color.
Okay, Bourbon is here in a caller line number two. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Is this an okay time to divide hostas?
You know, we're getting a little bit late, to be honest with you, and it's you'd probably be all right. I think if I could wait, I'd probably wait until spring, or actually even I've certainly done it in July and August when it's a little bit. The biggest problem is if you have really well drained soil, you'd probably be fine. But when you cut those surfaces like that, and then we happen to get into, I don't know if it's going to happen or not, we actually get into a wet period, then sometimes that rots. And that's always the biggest concern. If you were just going to move them, then you could probably be fine. But if you're actually dividing them and cutting them, then I'd be a little bit more concerned about them.
Okay.
Yeah, usually September is about the latest, I'd say, to be moving a whole lot of perennials.
Okay. But it could work if you don't overwater them in the soil.
Yeah, it's certainly, you know, if they're really healthy plants, you could certainly get away with it, more than likely. It's just, you know, I'm always dealing in being probably overly cautious, but it'd be something I'd probably, if I could wait, I'd probably wait. But if it's something you want to just try, it's a variety you've got plenty of, you're not too concerned about if you lose a few, then I'd say go for it.
Okay, thank you. Also, is there a way to propagate redbud trees from cuttings?
I'd really have to check on that, or maybe through the internet you might be able to find that. I'm not sure. Usually, you know, they're very easy from seed. I don't know if you've ever... They usually get all
they
these little seedlings. Yeah, they do it themselves.
Yeah,
they're popping up all over the place. And there probably is a way with redbuds, but it really depends on with woody plants. On sometimes it has to be done where they're softwood cuttings, you know, where it's just the trees just put out that new growth, or maybe it's hardwood cuttings, which would be this time of year. So you really need to kind of check on those kind of things when's the best time to do it. So more than likely there is, but it'd be something we need to check on. I don't know that right off the top of my head.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks. Bye. If you had some woody plants and you were really wanting to do some trimming or pruning and you'd kind of put it off and not kind of gotten around to it, I think the standard advice is, well, you don't – a time like this when there is still some growth, you really don't want to do that until – but if you can wait until the plant pretty much goes dormant, because what you don't want to do is stimulate new growth – can you still, I mean, if you still want to do some light trimming and pruning, say, you know, sometime between, I don't know, November 1st and the end of the year, is it okay to do that?
I think anytime, if you want to do light pruning, I think that's fine, as in, you know, it's hitting your head every time you walk by or something. I mean, there's no problem with doing that. Really, to do any really major pruning, generally we'd want to wait until the worst part of the winter is we've gotten through that.
So even just wait till the
I would wait till like spring. Certainly until February, March. We're getting at a time where you certainly could go ahead and prune things. So it's just it gets every time you cut those stems, you're actually cutting off food reserves, because all those stems are actually have food reserves in them. And so we'd like to leave that on as much as we can so they can make it through the winter and then hopefully, you know, do better come springtime. So major pruning would probably be waiting.
Okay. Savoy next, line one.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I heard you say it was good to plant iris in spring. Is it all right to buy the bulbs now in the stores at low rate and just hold them in the house over, or does that not work out well?
Are you talking about the bearded irises, the big bearded irises?
Mm-hmm.
You actually could go ahead, you know, it depends on how you can store them. If you can store them at fairly cool temperatures where it's not going to be too hot, I think you'll be just fine. Irises are really pretty tough.
Crawl space.
Yeah, and then go ahead and plant them in the springtime.
Mm-hmm.
Irises are a little one; they're really pretty tough.
Mm-hmm.
And I might just go ahead and plant them now, to be honest with you, and then just see what happens. So if you have a good place to store them, I might go ahead and store them. If you don't have a very good place to store them, I'd be planting them and then just see what happens.
And how about a berm with a south exposure? Would they get the drainage, or is that too high for freezing or something or other?
I think they'd be just fine on that. They really will tolerate, once they get established, they really tolerate a lot of drought.
And
so I think they'd be fine with that.
And then I had understood that they shouldn't get too waterlogged in the spring and so on. So I thought maybe berm was the thing.
Yeah, sure. They should do fine on that. They should like that.
Okay.
Okay.
But thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
One more here. We'll go to a caller in Belgium, line four. Hello.
Oh, good morning. I'd like to respond to the individual with the redbud. I have them grown in cracks of concrete. They will grow any place. I have them by the thousands. You can dig them up and put them in the ground, and they'll grow. Put a seed in the ground, it'll grow. They also make very good wood for turning. It's called an American exotic, if you can find one big enough to turn a bowl out of. But there's no problem growing redbuds, and they grow fast.
Right. I think he was trying to take cuttings. That's what we were trying to...
Why would you want to take a cutting?
I don't know. I was just trying to answer the question. But you're absolutely right. They reseed all over the place. I always end up having them pop up, which is great. You're absolutely right.
Every place. I have thousands of them.
And they're great plants. They really are. Nice native plant.
The only problem is they only are an understory plant. They really don't like to be out where they are full sun all the time. They like to have trees over top of them. They grow much better that way. Thank you very much.
Right. Sure, thanks.
Bye.
Well, we're just about at the point where we have to finish up. Again, just to remind people or to mention again, if you are thinking about planting spring flowering bulbs, daffodil, hyacinth, tulips, whatever, it's okay. Now, in fact, now is a great time. It'll be a nice weekend and get out there, dig in the dirt, and that's okay.
And I certainly would go ahead and water them afterwards, too, if we don't get into a little bit of rain here. And then we still have time if people want to dig up things like dahlias or caladiums or cannas or any of those things that we know aren't going to make it through the winter and you want to keep them, this would be a great time to do that. Elfin ears have gotten to be really popular over the last couple of years. You can dig those up. Bananas, I dig my banana up every year and put it in the basement. It does beautifully. So there's lots of things that if you want something else to bring inside, you can do that, too.
All right. Sandy Mason, she's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care, and we'll see you next month.
Hey, thank you.